This is On Second Thought. I'm Tony Harrison for Celeste Headlee. We welcome a trailblazer in American history and jurisprudence. You know, I nearly missed the cue to come back because I'm enjoying talking to you so much.
Thank you so much.
Break. Leah Ward Sears is the first African-American female Chief Justice in the United States. She served as Chief Justice of the Georgia Supreme Court from 2005 to 2009. An upcoming biography documents her story from growing up in Savannah to the Supreme Court. Leah Ward Sears is here in studio with me. Your Honor.
Thank you.
Justice.
Thank you so much.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Can we dive into the deep end of the
pool here? I'll try not to drown.
No, okay, you won't. Look, your work has been about resolving conflicts.
Right.
That's your work. That's your life work. I don't want to be a prisoner of the present moment. The nation, I need to remind myself, fought a civil war. There was the fight for civil rights in this country. But I need you to put this current moment of polarization, incivility, into context. Can you do that for us?
I will try. Let me give it to you like this.
Yeah.
The day after President Trump was elected, I have a daughter who's a millennial. She's 30 years old. She called me in tears. She was not really a big Hillary supporter, but definitely not a Trump supporter. And she was, at 30 years old, she was upset about the incivility in this country. How could this be? How could we be so divided?
Specifically what? What was troubling her?
Well, I mean, some of the comments that a man who had made comments off on that Access Hollywood tape and some of the comments that had been made and the terrible tone that the election took overall. She asked, how could this be? And my first reaction to her was, look, Brennan, you're 30, but I'm 62. So I was born in 1955. I lived through the civil rights movement. I lived through the women's rights movement. I lived through a time in Savannah when I'd get up every morning and there was this fellow named J.B. Stoner. He was a racist from Cobb County, I thought. I think he was. He would had an ad every morning saying, you nigger this, you nigger that, you nigger that. And I remember how my mother would get so upset, she'd call the radio station or TV station and say, get that man off the air. My children are trying to eat so they can go to school. This is nothing new in this. That's what I was telling her is this is just another bump in the road. And I do believe that we will, as a nation, get through this period if people of goodwill work to get us through this period, and we'll be fine.
I notice
it's a bad period, though.
I notice in referencing the Access Hollywood tape, you mentioned the man. You didn't mention Donald Trump by name.
I try. Well, you know,
is there a reason for that?
Well, I have been I've been a judge a long time. I've been a judge most of my life, since my 20s. And so I try very hard in the public sphere, not to jump into political battles. You know, I talk about civility. I talk about ethical things. I talk about morality things. But I think you have more power when you do what judges do, which is what judges are supposed to do, which is don't jump into the political battle of the time because one side won't listen to you.
But Justice Sears, I want to get to that point in just a moment. But Justice Sears, look, everyone is asking you, I'm sure, friends, colleagues, acquaintances, folks you meet in your day-to-day are asking you to explain from your point of view, hey, can you explain how it is Donald Trump won the election and is the 45th president of the United States? What do you say to people?
I can't explain that.
You really can't?
No, I can't. Well, okay. Let me try.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. I think that there is a deep upset and distrust among many, many Americans of the political status quo. And I don't think it all boils down to racism, although I think there's a good chunk of it there.
On a percentage basis, how much of it is racism?
Maybe 50-50.
You think it's 50-50?
I think it's a lot of racism.
And that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of racism. And and it's racial views unexpressed or unexplored. You know, people don't really sometimes, when they're afraid or when they're angry, they don't know from whence it comes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is fear of what they don't understand. But I think a lot of it is economics, of the fear that I won't get enough and others are taking mine, be it blacks
people
or
of color.
People of color or immigrants, you know, coming to this country. But I believe I know some Trump supporters who won't tell me they're Trump supporters, okay. Which is an issue right there. But who I don't believe are all that racist. I can't say there's no racism there. I think everybody has something about the other group that you have to deal with.
So I sort of compartmentalized our interview here.
Yes.
And this section is, I just called it Bringing Up Baby. Bringing, yes. As a child, your life as a child. You're quoted in the book saying, one of the defining features of my upbringing has been race. Here's the quote. In my very, very early years, race was not an issue. I didn't know I was any different from all the kids that I grew up with.
Right.
They were all white. I just thought, I was like everyone else. I was brown, and they were not as brown,
right?
Right?
That's right.
So talk about race as a defining issue in your life.
No, I thought, I grew up, I was born on a military base in Germany. My father was an army officer, and the army at that time was very segregated, not by race, but by class or rank.
Yeah.
Okay, so we lived in the officers' area, played with the officers' kids. It didn't mix much with NCOs and others. So I thought, and the other thing, just looking at my two parents, let me just break it down.
Yeah.
My father, have you seen the book?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I look at it? Because I haven't.
Well, I left it upstairs, but I have it, I've read 90% of it.
I have not.
Oh, you haven't?
I haven't.
And explain that very quickly.
Okay, because I don't want to look back. I have a hard time looking back at me. Okay, I like other people to, and it's more truthful. But I will read, I've looked through the manuscript. But if you've seen the book, you'll note that my father is a very dark-skinned
yes.
African-American man, and my mother is a very light-skinned African-American woman. So, you know, without asking a lot of questions, I just thought that some people, that race was, skin color was like eye color.
Right.
That some people were dark skin. I mean, is that so stupid?
No, of course not.
And that some people were light skin, and I was in the middle,
yeah.
Brown skin.
Right.
And so that was that. But I do remember very playing with these kids, running. These were the days where your parents would let you run out.
Oh, those days.
You were free, and my father would then stand on the corner, and he had this whistle, and we knew it was my father, and we'd all come running.
So you've given me a perfect moment to tell everyone about the book and to reintroduce you. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with former Georgia Supreme Court Justice Leah Ward Sears, Supreme Court Chief Justice. Wow. Her new biography is called Seizing Serendipity by Rebecca Davis. Do you remember the first time you were called a nigger?
Yeah, I was playing out in the woods on the post, the army post, and this kid turned around. I was old enough to be outside playing, and he said, those niggers. And I thought, oh, damn, this doesn't sound good. And I also remember when we came to the United States on a ship. Yeah. There's a picture in the book on us coming to the United States. My mother is holding me and my brother's there. And we rented a car or got a car. I don't know if they were. And we drove through New York City. And I noticed that the city was segregated, that black people were in one part and white people. And I was in the back seat and I said to my parents, what's going on? Don't you notice that the black people are on one side of the city and the white people. And I remember, you know, this is when the father drove and the mother sat on the sat on the bench. And they looked at each other, and there was this knowing look like, oh, Lordy, we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
We had not been exposed to that. And I was like 6 or 7 by then.
How old were you when the family moved to Savannah?
Junior high. It was called junior high school, so 12 or 13.
Now it's middle school or something, right?
It's middle school.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, but at the time.
I remember those junior high school days.
Yeah, it was like, so that would be 12 or 13.
So I can't let you go without having you reflect on your years growing up in Savannah. What do you remember about those years?
I liked Savannah. My father liked Savannah. I actually felt more comfortable in Savannah. I loved Atlanta. I jumped on a train with a friend of mine, lied to my parents. Shouldn't have done that, but jumped on.
That's a really good story in the book, by the way.
Yeah, called the Nancy Hanks. Told my father we were coming up to do one thing, and we went to Rich's department store. And I'd never seen anything like it, and I fell in love with Atlanta.
Yeah.
So.
Let's bring it forward.
Yes.
Was Ambassador Andy Young the first person to put the idea of becoming a judge in your mind?
Or was this someone? My goal was to be Thurgood Marshall.
Okay. Really?
Yeah, I was going to.
From what age?
From as long as I could remember. Like, see, I just followed the Warren Burger Court, Thurgood Marshall. I knew who Brennan, Justice Brennan, my daughter. I named my daughter Brennan after William Brennan.
No kidding. Okay.
I could name her Thurgood. Seriously. Okay, but so I named my daughter, but I followed from the earliest. So I was going to be a civil rights lawyer and change the law. I was going to change big cases. But the problem is I was born too late. You know, Thurgood Marshall, it had already been done.
Yeah.
So by the time I got to Atlanta and I met Ambassador Young, his goal was to put African Americans on the benches of, there were very few when he became mayor. Maybe four in the state on the whole state superior court system. And he said what he was going to do is pick young women and men, but young women, and groom them. And that's what he did.
And obviously the rise is extraordinary from that point on. Why did then Democratic Governor Zell Miller appoint you to the Georgia Supreme Court? This was in 1992.
Right.
You were 36 years old.
Right.
Here's the real question I want to ask you. Were you selected for the color of your skin and the content of your character?
I think both. And I think my intelligence.
Of course.
From what I heard from his executive assistant, because I think he had someone else in mind. I'm sure he had. So I come walking in, and I knew he had someone else in mind. But I told him I had this long list of historical characters who had done things at young age, that Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, our men fight it. And it was men at the time.
Yes.
At 18 and blah, blah, blah. And when I left, his executive counsel assistant said she said I was feisty. And I also remember offering him advice on how to settle a lawsuit. I just didn't have, I just didn't know I wasn't supposed to do that.
Just as Leah Ward Sears is here, were you convinced that you were up for the job? Was there a part of you that thought, I'm maybe a bit in over my head with this job?
Well, when I applied, I knew I wasn't getting the job.
Okay.
Now, But when he called, when Zell Miller called, Governor Miller called, I was speechless. And people started gathering around the walls of my chambers. And they thought that I had been appointed to a seat. There was an open seat on the Court of Appeals at that time. And they thought I had gotten that seat. And at a certain point in the conversation, I looked up and I said to the people who were trying to be quiet, because I'm talking to the governor, I said, he put me on the Supreme Court. And they went, wow, and all that. So he knew I had a crowd there. I did think Let me say this. I did think, whoa, this is going to be tough. But I knew I was driving around 285 on my way to work, and this thing came into my head that God doesn't give you more than you can chew. Now, you're going to get in there, and you're going to do everything that you need to do to be a success because you have people riding on it, and you will not fail. And God did not put you there to fail, so you just go on and do it.
Your reaction to what I'm about to play for you. Ready? Let's roll clip one.
Chances are, 'cause I wear a silly grin.
Johnny Mathis.
Yes.
What did he mean to you growing up?
Is this in the book?
Yes, it's
really?
In the book.
Okay, I gotta read. Well, I was visiting my aunt in San Diego. I gotta study.
Now, I don't have much time,
okay,
but I need
I was visiting my aunt in San Diego, and we were just, this is 1968, and we were just swooning. She had just had a baby, and I remember my Aunt Jewel saying, you know, he goes to the other side or something like that, some old thing. And I was like, what do you mean? And this was the first time I realized that some people were gay, and I was 13. I had never known that.
And that's all the time I have.
Okay, good enough.
This is so wonderful. Okay. I could go on for another hour easily. Leah Ward Sears, jurist and former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Georgia. A biography about her life called Seizing Serendipity will be published by the University of Georgia Press in September. Leah Ward Sears, what a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. You really did read this book.
Yes.
Okay.